Hello, and welcome to Science World. Coming up on our program, we'll have a report on NASA's Orbiting Carbon Observatory 2. The spacecraft was launched earlier this week to monitor atmospheric carbon dioxide, the heat-trapping gas thought to be responsible for much of Earth's global warming. We'll hear about a new study that shows malaria may make people smell more alluring to mosquitoes, something that researchers think just might increase the spread of this dreaded disease. And in our one-on-one segment, we'll talk with the project scientist of NASA's New Horizons mission to Pluto and beyond. The mission spacecraft will travel 5 billion kilometers for its rendezvous with Pluto and its moons in about a year from now. These stories and more are coming your way on VOA Science, Health, and Technology magazine, Science World. The Earth's atmosphere is overloaded with heat-trapping carbon dioxide, which scientists say will lead to disastrous climate changes. NASA launched its first mission this week to learn more about the carbon dioxide in our atmosphere. Science World's Doug Bernard has more.
NASA's new satellite, called the Orbiting Carbon Observatory 2 satellite, or OCO2, was launched in the pre-dawn hours this past Wednesday. The two-year, $465 million project is designed to pinpoint where the planet's forests and oceans are reabsorbing atmospheric carbon, a cycle that is key to Earth's temperature. The observatory will eventually be positioned 705 kilometers above the planet, where it will pass over the same point on Earth at the same time every 16 days. That will give scientists insight into how levels of carbon dioxide change over weeks, months, and years. More than 50 years of measurements show that about half of the amount of carbon dioxide put into the atmosphere by both natural processes and human activities ends up being reabsorbed. That proportion has remained fairly constant, even as the total amount of atmospheric carbon has climbed. Studies by the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the Scripps Institution of Oceanography show that carbon amounts have grown from concentrations of 315 parts per million in the 1950s to 400 parts per million today. NASA hoped to have OCO flying in 2009, but a launch accident claimed the satellite. Congress agreed to fund a replacement, OCO2, which was originally scheduled for launch Tuesday. That operation was scrapped due to a problem with water flow at the launch site. This is Doug Bernard for Science World.
Tuberculosis has been eliminated in most developed countries and is near that point in dozens more. Now, international public health officials have announced plans to eliminate TB in the more than 30 countries that are already having low rates of infection. Jessica Berman has more.
Fewer than 100 TB cases per million people are reported each year in 33 countries and territories, including Jordan, the United Arab Emirates, Malta, and the West Bank and Gaza Strip. Still, that translates to 155,000 new infections and some 10,000 deaths. The new framework, driving down the tuberculosis rate to fewer than 10 new cases per million annually by 2035, was outlined this week in Rome. International public health officials are meeting there to coordinate TB elimination efforts. The ultimate goal is eradication of the disease in those countries by 2050. The WHO defines elimination as less than one new case per million people each year. Giovanni Battista Migliori is head of the European Respiratory Society and director of the WHO Collaborating Center for Tuberculosis and Lung Diseases.
We need an extra coordination of all the areas, all the compartments of this TB control elimination program. And those are eight main areas.
Migliori says the eight key interventions include increased funding to screen for active and silent TB infection in high-risk groups, such as people with HIV, residents of impoverished communities, and migrants from neighboring countries. In addition, he says, the government should invest in research into new tools to rapidly identify and treat tuberculosis, including multidrug-resistant strains. Migliori says there's a strong motivation for low-burden countries to try to eliminate TB.
There are several studies showing that the treatment and prevention of tuberculosis is cost-effective, so that the society costs due to tuberculosis are much higher than the investment needed to prevent them.
Migliori says a renewed push to eliminate TB is needed, so a resurgence of a preventable and treatable disease does not occur in low-burden countries. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
In the scramble for a slice of the $200 billion commercial satellite launch industry, India took another step this past week by launching satellites from four nations. Anjana Pasricha reports from New Delhi.
3, 2, 1, 0.
India's Polar satellite launch vehicle blasted off Monday morning from the eastern port of Sriharikota, carrying a 714-kilogram French Earth observation satellite and four smaller satellites. Prime Minister Narendra Modi, who witnessed the launch, pointed out that all five satellites put into orbit were from advanced countries.
Even today's satellites are all from developed nations, France, Canada, Germany, and Singapore. Truly, this is a global endorsement of India's space capability.
The launch marks another milestone in India's efforts to grab a larger slice of the lucrative global satellite launch market. Focusing attention on the frugality of India's space program, Prime Minister Modi said India has the potential to become the world's satellite launch service provider. He pointed to reports that the $100 million spent on making the Hollywood movie Galaxy exceeded the cost of a spacecraft India sent to Mars last November.
Even today, our program stands out as the most cost-effective in the world. Our scientists have shown the world a new paradigm of fusion engineering and the power of imagination.
India has faced some criticism that a poor country should have more pressing priorities than launching satellites, such as supplying clean water and toilets to its people. But Prime Minister Modi says that the country's space program is making a huge contribution to the common man through its applications in areas such as disaster and resource management. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Coming up in our one-on-one segment, we'll talk with the New Horizons Project scientist about the spacecraft's mission to study Pluto, its moons, and a couple of Kuiper Belt objects. So, with Pluto in mind, it's time for the Science World Quick Quiz. How many Earth years are equal to just one Pluto year? In other words, how long does it take Pluto to circle the Sun? Is it A, 248.5 years, B, 327.5 years, or C, 180.7 years. Good luck. We'll give you the correct answer in a few minutes from now.
Thanks for listening to VOA Science, Health, and Technology News Magazine, Science World.
The parasitic disease malaria is spread by mosquitoes, and a new study suggests mosquitoes are more likely to hone in on the carriers of the disease because, well, they smell tastier. Steve Barragona has this report.
Penn State University biologist Mark Mesker has studied a germ called cucumber mosaic virus that infects squash and other plants. And when it does, Mesker says,
we see an elevation in the odors of the plant that we think causes aphids to be more attracted to the host plants.
The aphids pick up the virus when they come to the plant for the advertised meal and carry it to the next plant. Some studies hint that malaria might be doing something similar. When Mesker and his colleagues tested how mosquitoes responded to mice infected with the parasite, they found that sick animals were less attractive to the insects.
But then once the mice recovered, there was a period of several days where the mice became much more attractive to mosquitoes, and they still had high levels of the parasite.
The scientists then collected volatile chemicals wafting off infected and uninfected mice. They let the mosquitoes get a whiff of those chemicals and found that just the scent of an infected mouse had about the same attractive effect as an actual infected mouse. They identified a handful of chemicals in the mouse odor cocktail that were found at higher levels in infected animals than healthy ones. A dab of those chemicals would make even a healthy mouse more appealing to mosquitoes. It's a clever way to help the parasite catch a ride to its next victim, Mesker says.
The malaria parasite is sort of enhancing the odor cues that the mosquitoes are already using to find their hosts.
And he adds, knowing what those cues are could help find people who are carrying the malaria parasite but don't know it.
It would be nice to have biomarkers that you could use to identify infected individuals who are not actually sick with malaria but or have asymptomatic infections but are still capable of transmitting the disease.
It's a long way off, he added, but it could lead to a portable machine that can sniff out those chemical signatures of infection. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
Film and game industry artists are joining forces with computer sciences at the University of Southern California's Mixed Reality Lab to study and develop immersive media for military training. The public recently got a sneak preview of the futuristic technologies they're working on. Elizabeth Lee attended the demonstration in Los Angeles.
What can once only be imagined in science fiction may soon become reality. Members of the public, including film student Dean Morrow, got to see and feel that possible future with the help of a workstation, a headset, and gloves with sensors.
Your eyes are fully immersed in a stereoscopic 3D environment, and once your eyes are there, your mind is there. Your ears are there. You're being guided by a sergeant who has computer voice, but nonetheless it works.
You can still command the platform by dragging the map.
Instead of looking at data on 2D screens, for example, you can have it floating as a 3D map in front of you.
Mark Bolas heads the University of Southern California's Mixed Reality Lab.
Physical touch screen.
It's developing a futuristic workspace for the Navy using virtual reality. The aim? To imagine technology that will be available in 15 years so Navy ships can become lighter, better protected, and provide more information to sailors to help them make better decisions.
If you're going to build a ship, you better be thinking about the design of that ship at least 15 years before you build it, because that's how long it's going to take to make it.
Bolas and his team visited different types of ships to learn about real-world problems and how virtual reality and 3D models can help, from ship design to more operational improvements, including using strategically placed cameras.
Our demonstration here, you can see that you can put yourself in the eyeball of a drone that's out miles away from the ship. But instead of trying to figure out from some video feed what the drone is seeing, you're actually flying in that drone.
With futuristic sensing technology, any surface, just like this piece of glass, can become a touchscreen.
Any dumb surface can become an active surface by knowing where you're touching, by tracking the hand, and then knowing that you're pushing against it.
Dean Morrow says many industries can benefit from this workspace of the future.
And so this is maybe a more productive way for creative people to work, because you're using your entire body to work instead of hunched over a laptop typing.
Mark Bolas says many of these virtual reality technologies may hit the commercial market before they end up on a Navy ship.
You are now seeing the synthetic view from the UAS's optical sensors.
Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
Health ministers from across West Africa are attending an emergency conference in Ghana to discuss the regional outbreak of Ebola. The World Health Organization says the highly infectious disease has killed more than 400 people in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Police and medical workers man checkpoints on the outskirts of Kanema in Sierra Leone, the site of an Ebola outbreak that is spreading across West Africa. Authorities are forcing people to test for the disease. Some victims try to avoid detection, preferring to die in secret. The outbreak is the worst since the disease was identified in the 1970s, says Peter Pyatt, director of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine.
The outbreak in West Africa is unprecedented in the history of Ebola outbreaks because it involves three countries at least, capital cities, multiple sources, and that will make it far more difficult to control.
Ebola causes fever, vomiting, bleeding and diarrhea. It is spread through contact with the blood or other fluids of infected people. Doctors say a lack of understanding is contributing to its rapid spread. Porous borders between the affected countries make it difficult to contain. Families often bury victims in secret, says Dr. Sheikh Moa Khan of Kanema Government Hospital in Sierra Leone.
By the time people are dead with the Ebola, they are more infectious than all. So if they take care of their burial on their own, 10 more will be infected.
In neighbouring Liberia, nurse Elizabeth Smith lies bleeding on a hospital bed. She contracted the Ebola virus from her patients. Her colleagues are doing what they can to help, but her chances of survival are about 10%. District Health Officer Philip Azuma says Liberia cannot cope alone.
We are calling on the international community to come and support the ministry. Right now, we can't do it now. We need the international support.
Health workers bury the dead in unmarked graves in the middle of the bush. The disease is so infectious that disinfectant is sprayed every step of the way. The workers' protective clothing is buried along with the body. The death toll from the outbreak is growing. Doctors warn the response has so far been far from adequate. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Let's see if you correctly answered this week's Science World Quick Quiz. A few minutes ago, we asked, how many Earth years are equal to just one Pluto year? Is it A, 248.5 years, B, 327.5 years, or C, 180.7 years? The answer is A. Circling it in a rather odd and broad elliptical orbit, Pluto takes about 248.5 Earth years to make just one rotation around the Sun. Pluto's average distance from the Sun is about 5.9 billion kilometers, but with its elliptical orbit, its actual distance from the Sun varies. At its closest point, or perihelion, Pluto is about 4.4 billion kilometers from the Sun, and at its furthest point, or aphelion, it's about 7.3 billion kilometers from the Sun. Thanks for playing along with us on this week's Science World Quick Quiz. We'll have another brain teaser for you again next week.
This is Science World on VOA. Be sure to visit our new website and blog at voanews.com/science.
Back on January 19, 2006, a spacecraft that's about the size of a grand piano was blasted into space, perched atop a powerful and radically enhanced Atlas V rocket. The New Horizons spacecraft took off from Earth at such an amazing fast speed that it has been called the fastest spacecraft ever launched. Of course, there was a good reason for this need for speed. New Horizons' destination is way off in the outer reaches of our solar system, where in about a year from today, it will have a close encounter with the dwarf planet Pluto, its moons, and a couple of objects in the Kuiper Belt. Today, on our one-on-one segment, New Horizons project scientist Hal Weaver from the Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Laboratory tells us all about this incredibly ambitious mission to the far side of our solar system.
This is a new exploration of the outer solar system. The first time it's ever been done. The New Horizons spacecraft was launched in January of 2006, the fastest spacecraft ever to leave the Earth. It was able to fly by Jupiter in only 13 months and is on a beeline towards the planet Pluto in the outer solar system, which has never been visited before. So we're going to fly by Pluto and examine in great detail Pluto and all of its moons. It has five moons. And after that detailed exploration, we hope to, if the spacecraft is doing well, we'll continue on into the deeper into the Kuiper Belt, which is that vast expanse outside the orbit of Neptune, containing hundreds of thousands of objects, you know, probably more populous than any other region in the solar system, but has never been explored before until the New Horizons spacecraft is going to dive into it and examine some of the objects close up.
You brought up something that I thought was kind of interesting, that the spacecraft was the fastest to ever leave the Earth. Did the spacecraft have new technology that allows it to go faster?
The thing that really allowed us to go so fast off the launch pad was we had to miniaturize everything. Pluto is very hard to reach in a reasonable amount of time. It takes a lot of energy to get from the Earth to Pluto. So in order to minimize the travel time and make it as easy as possible to reach that, you know, distant Pluto, we tried to make everything as compact and as small as possible. And so we have miniaturized but very advanced instruments. We then put that, and also lightweighted everything that we could, and put that on top of the largest launch vehicle the United States had available, and the Atlas 555, those provide about 1.5 million pounds of thrust, you know, for a body that's less than 1,000 pounds. You know, we have this huge rocket engine, but then on the strapped around it are five solid rocket boosters that blast off and give this huge momentum transfer to our little spacecraft. It looks like a little hood ornament at the top of the, you know, on a car almost. It's sitting at the very top of this huge stack that launches off of the pad at Cape Kennedy and sends it on that beeline trajectory towards Pluto.
So how far must the spacecraft travel to reach its destination?
So it's roughly about 3 billion miles that the spacecraft is traveling to reach its primary target, Pluto. But we hope not to, you know, we won't be stopping there. We'll be continuing on. We could operate for, you know, at least another 20 years or so. We have enough power to do that, and assuming everything, you know, all the instruments survive that long. But the journey to Pluto itself takes about 9.5 years. We won't reach Pluto until July the 14th, 2015. So a little bit more than a year from now, our whole view of the outer solar system is going to be changed by the information that we gather during the New Horizons flyby of the Pluto system. We're so far away, when we pass by Pluto, we're so far away from the Earth, if you turn on a flashlight, you know, at Pluto and shine it back towards the Earth, it takes 4.5 hours for that light to reach the Earth. So it takes a total of 9 hours round trip time to communicate with the spacecraft, so we can't actually joystick the spacecraft as it's flying through the Pluto system. We have to program everything autonomously in advance. So we have a sequence of commands that were very carefully crafted over a couple of years to take as much data as we possibly can and to explore the Pluto system as carefully as we can as we fly by, but it's all done by a pre-sequenced series of commands.
What will the New Horizons spacecraft do once it does reach Pluto and its moons?
So the main objectives of New Horizons spacecraft is to investigate the Pluto system close up. And you can basically distill down the most important scientific objectives into three different types. One is just to take close-up pictures of the surface at resolutions approaching football field size, roughly many thousands of times better than even the great Hubble Space Telescope can do from Earth. So we'll finally get a chance to see, you know, what Pluto, Charon, and all of its moons look like close up. We have no other way of doing that other than to fly by. And we know from our previous experience over decades of exploration with NASA spacecraft, ESA spacecraft throughout the, you know, the years, that we're always surprised when we go to a new system, a new body, new objects, and see them for the first time close up. The other thing that we want to do is measure the composition of the surfaces of these bodies. We know that there's lots of variability over the surface of Pluto, but right now we can, the resolution is so poor, we can only see little splotchy bright patches and dark patches, and we want to know what's causing that. And by looking at those surface features, we'll learn what's causing these brightness variations over the surface. And then the final thing is that Pluto, in fact, does have a very thin atmosphere. You know, it might not be there forever, but it's there now. It's actually surprisingly close to the composition of the atmosphere of the Earth. It's mostly molecular nitrogen, just like what it is on the Earth. Probe the atmosphere so that it can tell us something about how the evolution of Pluto has proceeded as it's gone close into the sun and is now moving farther away.
That was the project scientist for the New Horizons mission, Hal Weaver, from the Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Laboratory in Maryland. That's it for this edition of Science World. Thanks so much for listening. Before we go, we'd like to invite you to visit our new website and blog. The address is voanews.com/science. Along with program information, you'll find stories, links, and much more. So stop by and visit us on the internet. The address again is voanews.com/science. Science World has been produced by Bob Doty, and I'm Rick Pantaleo. Be sure to join us either online or on your radio next Saturday and Sunday as we check out the latest in science, health, and technology on Science World.